My name is Hasan Sorrells, and this is the Leadership Lessons from the Great Books podcast, episode number 60. We don't have a co-host today, and this isn't a bonus episode. It's sort of a catch-up episode. We're going to cover a few areas of listener questions and comments and feedback. We're going to talk a little bit about the most recent Mother's Day that we have had. And of course, we're going to talk about where we are going to be going for the remainder of 2023 with this podcast, some books that we will be covering, and some guests that we will be having on the show. So this is kind of a catch-up episode. So take some time, go get yourself a cup of coffee, and listen to this music bump, and we'll come out on the other side and get started on the podcast today. And to the sounds of the Barber of Seville, I guess we're going to get started here. So a couple of things that I want to point out, I want to open up with here in a sort of, like I said, catch-up episode of the podcast. So today I'd like to open up with mothers and motherhood. We've been reading a lot of books written by women over the course of the last few weeks on the podcast, everything from Virginia Woolf to Joan Didion, and of course Jane Austen has been thrown in there. Upcoming is Zora Neale Hurston, as well as Jane Eyre, which was written by Charlotte Bronte. So we've got these female authors that we are reading right now on the podcast. In answer to some listener feedback that I received last year around covering female authors and really trying to discover and explore for leaders what they can learn from authors who write from a distinctly female perspective. We've discovered many things in reading these books, particularly from Jane Austen on the tyranny of the small things, right? Or how you can learn emotional intelligence, how you can grow in emotional intelligence just by standing around in a drawing room. Well, there's other aspects of leadership that can be gleaned from books written by female authors. And we saw this in Virginia Woolf. We saw this in Mrs. Dalloway by Virginia Woolf. We also saw this in Play It As It Lays by Joan Didion, where, and this is a big idea here, and it's one that leaders can really glom onto, particularly in our era, is this idea of the hand that rocks the cradle being the hand that eventually leads the world. And of course, on the cusp of Mother's Day, recently passed in North America, I'd like to talk a little bit about mothers and motherhood. Both of those institutions, and I shouldn't say both of those institutions because mothers aren't an institution necessarily, motherhood is an institution, as well as mothers. Mothers and motherhood are both fundamental to our society and to our culture. As a matter of fact, in our modern era, we struggle with understanding the fundamental nature of motherhood. We struggle with understanding the fundamental nature and the fundamental need for mothers. And I don't mean we struggle with it in terms of understanding what mothers do. I'm not talking about women as birthing persons. I'm not even talking about women as birthing people. I'm talking about women with their own distinct view of the world that was given to them by their creator. They bring that distinctive view of the world to motherhood, and they bring that distinctive view of the world to future leaders. Napoleon came out of a cradle, and so did Adolf Hitler. Vaclav Havel came out of a cradle, and everyone is somebody's mother, even Stalin, and Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and George Washington, and even Donald Trump. Everybody's got a mother. leaders learn the importance of leadership in the home first. Home is the first incubator of leadership. It is the first incubator of organization. And we'll be kind of leaning into this more and more on the podcast as we go through the rest of the year. The home is that first incubator. Family is the first government. We see this in the Bible, and it is reflected throughout the rest of society and culture. If you want a better government, if you want better politicians, if you want better leaders, look at your house first. Look to who raised you. Whose hand was it that rocked your cradle? We saw the dynamic of families creating leaders in The Good Earth by Pearl S. Buck. But we also saw it in Persuasion and, of course, Sense and Sensibility most strongly. Look, when motherhood is abandoned or absent, there is a vacuum that is created, right? And that vacuum will be filled by something. We were told that by a physicist who was worth his salt and whose cradle was rocked by a mother's hand when he was a child. Nature abhors a vacuum, Mother Nature especially. And so when motherhood is abandoned or when it is absent, what we find is the replacement for motherhood becomes the state. The state represented usually by a tyrannical father, as we saw in Hamlet, in King Lear, and most subtly in Hermann Hesse's Siddhartha. The tyrannical father, represented by the state, represents also the patriarchy. Now, there's not a lot of talk about that these days, and as a matter of fact, when you say the word patriarchy, everybody sort of grimaces in our very sophisticated postmodern times. But the fact of the matter is, you will have a patriarchy and you will have a matriarchy, and you need both. You need both of those individuals in order to create a whole leader. But the first leader is birthed by the first mother, and he is raised, or she is raised, by the first mother and encouraged by the first mother, and is then pushed out into the world. I'm not the first person to say this, but a good mother raises her children to be taken by the world. We see this in Michelangelo's statue, the Pietà. A mother raises her sons and her daughters to be consumed by the world, but she also raises her sons and daughters to fight through or even against such consumption, and to lead people, to lead societies, to lead cultures, and quite frankly, even to lead in their families towards a much greater and more all-encompassing set of goals. We'll talk more about mothers and, well, fathers, sisters and brothers, chickens and ducks, horses and cows. And I don't want to put everything all in one category here. But those are just a few thoughts that I had in reading some of our female authors. And by the way, the dynamics between women in determining how they will approach femininity have been raging in our culture. Gosh, for at least the last 120 years, and by American culture, in our culture, I mean in the culture of the United States, and in the culture of the West, gosh, well, ever since probably the Middle Ages, and if not before that, going all the way back into the late Roman era. Now, the battles between men and women are something that And the battles for leadership between men and women are something that we have not really explored. We haven't really gotten deep into that topic here on the podcast, partially because we haven't really had any books that really focus around that or really sort of display that beyond maybe Julius Caesar by William Shakespeare, or even King Lear, also by Shakespeare. But we'll focus on some of those other dynamics in years to come on the podcast. So moving forward, I'd like to answer some listener feedback. So I do get your messages. I do talk with you live. A podcast of this nature, though, sort of defies email, right? It defies tweeting about. It really defies Instagram reeling about. And so where I mostly hear feedback from you, the listener, about this podcast, about what we're trying to build here, about what we're doing here, where I mostly hear feedback from you is in person, right? You'll walk up to me, you'll see me reading a book. Some friend will have told you that I have this podcast. I had three of these different types of interactions over the last couple of weeks. Or you'll be very kind and you'll say you love the sound of my voice, which I also love hearing. And you'll ask me to say the opening lines of the intro to this podcast. And of course, me being the kind and gracious person I am, I will accommodate you. That's all feedback, right? Now, every time I go on another person's podcast, like we have gone on Leadership Powered by Common Sense with Doug Thorpe. We've also gone on the Sense and Signal podcast with Dan and Joda, both of which you can find in Apple, Spotify, Google, and everywhere you listen to podcasts. And those are just two examples of podcasts that we have gone on in the course of the last year and a half almost of doing this project. When we go on those podcasts, we get feedback from you about our arguments, about our ideas, about what we are promoting and what we are thinking of, what we're doing and how we're approaching this. And some of the big feedback that I get from you all, and the biggest question, I guess, that I get from you all is, hey, Son, where is all of this going? Do you have a plan, by the way, is the unstated question there. And then, of course, there's some other questions there. So let's start off with this first idea. Where is all of this going and do I have a plan? Yes, I know where this is going. Yes, I do have a plan. So just want to let you know that I do know where this is going. And the plan is to continue reading great books. The plan is to begin to explore ideas that were built in our first year in various large silos, right, of content that we built, silos of authors. So last November, as an example, we covered warfare, right, and we covered what you can learn as a leader from, well, the works of warriors, the works of people who have actually had a bullet fly past their head, right, and have learned how to lead men past that point of fear and into victory. And so we read books by Ulysses S. Grant and William T. Sherman. We also read books by, or we read the writings of folks like the author of About Face, right? And also, E.B. Sledge, right? You know, with The Old Breed. And so the reason why I'm going is because I'm trying to remember the titles here from last November, I'm trying to do it off the top of my head, also while staring at my bookshelf here. And so, and by the way, About Face is by Colonel David Hackworth. So we read Hackworth, right? We read About Face. We read the Civil War memoirs of Grant and Sherman. We also read With the Old Breed by E.B. Sledge. And of course, we read Lawrence of Arabia by B.H. Liddell Hart. Now, what can you take from those four ideas, from those four warriors, right? David Hackworth, Lawrence of Arabia, T.E. Lawrence, Ulysses S. Grant and William T. Sherman, and of course, E.B. Sledge. What are the things, what's the thing that unites them all? Well, the thing that unites them all is that they were all in war, right? They were all in warfare. That's the most obvious thing. And they learned tactics of leadership. They learned tactics of development. They learned strategies of leadership. And of course, they were able to form and articulate later on in their books and in their writing and in their observations, doctrines of what worked in leadership and what did not. What can you take from that as a leader? Well, there's a couple of things. The first thing is nothing beats experience, right? And the second thing is a man must have a code, to paraphrase from Omar on that great HBO show from now, 20 years ago, The Wire. If you don't have a code, if you don't have a strategy, and if you don't have tactics, you really can't be an effective leader. And so how do you develop a code? There are books that can help you develop a code. And, you know, some of those we have begun to read on the podcast. So here's a book that can help you develop a code, The Road to Serfdom by F.A. Hayek. Or here's another book that can help you develop a code, The Good Earth by Pearl S. Buck. Even books that seem innocuous, such as Mrs. Dalloway by Virginia Woolf or A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, can help you develop a code, can help you develop a series of beliefs, right? A series of doctrines that you can build a strategy on. Now, to the point of strategy, right? What is your strategy, right? What's your strategy for being a leader? How do you move forth as a leader? Well, a couple of books that can help you with that are The Way of the Samurai, right? Which we read with John Hill. Also, Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse, right? And interestingly enough, Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe. These books can help you develop a strategy, because once you have a code, then you need to understand how to make a map that conforms to that code. And then, of course, in our era, there's tactics, right? Everybody loves tactics. Everybody wants to get tactical. How do I actually practically do this or practically do that? Stop giving me a bunch of theory, right? Get me into practice. Well, okay, you want to get into practice? Check out Vladimir Lenin's How to Organize the Competition, which we read last year, or even the Book of Nehemiah in that hoary old tome, The Bible. You can even understand tactics by reading books that seem to be casually innocuous, such as Watchmen, the great graphic novel by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. These are all books that we have covered on the podcast, right? And you can see the links, and we will place the links to the episodes where these books are featured in the show notes below the player of this episode. But my point is, if you want to understand doctrine, if you want to understand strategy, and if you want to understand tactics, by the way, another great book for tactics, particularly nowadays with modern argumentation and modern leadership, is a book that almost no one reads anymore. I was just talking about this book and with a listener the other day, The City of God by Augustine. Doctrine, strategy, and tactics. These are the principles. These are the ways in which we move through our books and we move through our larger concepts and ideals, starting from a month of maybe talking about, you know, a particular set of doctrine and then building out and building out and building out on that in the subsequent months. This is a podcast you really got to pay attention to, right? This is not a podcast for the faint of heart. And so we do have a plan. And we do know where this is going. By the way, our ultimate journey, our ultimate goal in our journey is to create enough podcast episodes where we can begin to package them together for you. And we can begin to give them to you as listeners. We can even begin to distribute them as packages, 2- and 3-parters, right? Putting together larger ideals and larger ideas that really focus around areas that we think leaders should be paying attention to. And as a matter of fact, this type of posture, this type of approach to the content really matches what is in my most current book, The 12 Rules for Leaders, The Foundation for Intentional Leadership. By the way, a sub-question that usually gets asked to me after I talk a little bit about this with folks is, do you ever plan on doing a book? And the answer is, well, we'll see what happens. Now, on the question of the books, right, how do I read all these books? Because one of my co-hosts recently asked me a question. He said, how are you reading, you know, 4 heavy books in a month, right? How are you accomplishing this? How are you putting this together? How are you making this happen? Because he's like, I have a book list, and I barely get through 1 or 2 books in a year, much less 4 really heavy duty books in the course of a month. How do you read these books? And the simple answer to the question is, well, I don't watch a whole lot of Netflix. Now, don't get me wrong, I do watch my fair share of television. I'm personally a big fan right now, and walking through right now Star Trek, the original series. I'm a sucker for Star Trek. Anywhere where it's on, I will watch it. Please don't send me a bunch of Star Trek books. but I do like watching that. And so the question is, you know, how do you read all these books? And the answer is one page at a time, right? And so I will pick up a book like Sense and Sensibility, which came in at 324 pages, right? And I'll flip through it initially, and I'll look for large themes. I'll look at the structure of the book. How many pages are in a chapter? How many chapters make up the book? What are some larger themes inside of that book? And as I'm flipping through the book, I'll begin to highlight, or I'll begin to mark ideas or concepts that jump out to me that I think would be relevant for listeners of the podcast. Ideas around conflict, adapting to change, accountability, feedback, team building, persuasion, you know, the larger things that we seek to explore as leaders. And I'll mark the pages that those themes jump out to me on. So for instance, when I did this with Things Fall Apart by Chinwe Achebe, one of the things that really jumped out to me in reading that book, particularly in parts 1 and 2, was in the nature of how conflict was discussed in an Igbo tribe in Nigeria. And conflict was discussed, by the way. It was just discussed in a different type of way than what was explored in Heart of Darkness. So I mark up the book initially. Then I go back and I begin reading the chapters. Usually, to be honest, I can read through probably about 5 to 10 chapters in a week. If I'm really concentrating and really bearing down, if I've got a really busy week, then it's something like 4 to 5 in a week. But I can get through at least half to three quarters of the book before I have to begin to write the scripts for these podcasts, right? And then from there, we begin to write the scripts. We begin to cobble ideas together. We begin to build in larger themes, what I call beats. Typically, if you're listening to the format of this podcast, there's 4 beats inside of each podcast where we explore 4 larger ideas. And then we close out and we talk about staying on the path. I read my books, I highlight them, I note them. In some cases, I finish the book. Sometimes I don't. And then we move on, right? When you're reading 75 to 85% of a book, covering that last 15% sometimes is very, very critical. So, for instance, with the Russian writers, any of the Russian writers, from Fyodor Dostoevsky all the way to Tolstoy, and of course Anton Chekhov, I try to read all of the book or all of the content because, quite frankly, the punchline is usually at the end with the Russian authors. Whereas with Didion or even with Hemingway, the punchlines are scattered throughout. So that's just an answer to the question of, you know, how do you read all these books, right? What's your actual practical strategy? And so if you're going to read books, I do recommend doing it that way. Pick up the book, approach it, figure out what the larger themes are, skim it a little bit, highlight some things that you see, words, phrases, thoughts. And then go back in and start doing a deep dive into the books. Now, the last piece of listener feedback that I often get is this question. How can you hope to make a dent in the world of leadership with a podcast? That is a question that goes directly. It hits directly at the heart of leadership, but it also strikes directly at the nature of the existential crisis that we have here in the world today. Most people's attention spans are less than that of a TikTok video. Most people are so crowded right now with so many different pieces of information and content and entertainment coming at them that they cannot absorb a meaningful discussion. And then there's the issue of debate. We live in postmodern times. And unfortunately, in postmodern times, debate and the ways in which we remember debate, many of us remember debate in sort of the modern era of debate, which the modern era of debate was sort of the Gore Vidal, William Buckley kind of patrician debate, right? Where we are seeking a relevant means of discovery about another person or about a method of discourse or even about an idea, right? But now we live in a space and a time, and I'm not the first person to say this, where argument itself is even obsolete because no one has the attention span to listen to an argument, much less follow large ideas. And of course, in our social media driven world, where persuasion has now been replaced by entertainment, you don't have the audience with the attention span to be receptive to persuasion. Debate is no longer relevant as a means of discovery or even as a means of dominance, right? As a means of proving that you're correct. And so here on this podcast, we realize that we are trying to do something that is more in a classical discourse mode, right? Where we're trying to persuade you of a set of ideas, or we're trying to do something in a modern discourse where we're trying to establish a truth by playing an advocate, maybe by setting up a straw man or by committing a logical fallacy on purpose and then going back and fighting against that fallacy in real time. We realize that both of those methods are déclassé, such as it were. They are passé, such as it were. And now we live in a world where we live in an argumentative world, where we even live in an entertainment world where a podcast is supposed to establish views as a social standard via sheer dominance. The reason we read classic books and the reason why we're going in the direction that we're going in and the reason why we think we can make a dent in leadership is because, well, what else would we hope to do with such a venue? What else would we hope to do with such a tool? I know that many folks listening to the podcast will tell me that the episodes are too long or I don't have that much time. If that's the case, then it's probably not for you. There's a lot of other business podcasts out there. There's a lot of other philosophy podcasts out there. There's a lot of other leadership podcasts out there. Those podcasts are probably okay for you if you have a short attention span. They're probably okay for you if reading about books is not the thing for you. They're probably okay for you if you don't understand what I just said about classical discourse, modern discourse, and postmodern discourse. If that confuses you or frustrates you or makes you feel icky, it's probably, this podcast is probably not the one you're looking for. But let me tell you a story. I was recently reading a book at my local Y and started talking to a gentleman who was sitting behind me. And he said something very striking. He said, "I've been trying to read more of the great books and trying to get away from the news." He said to me, "I recently finished reading The Brothers Karamazov, and I'm now going through Tolstoy, reading Anna Karenina. And I'd really like to read that book you have in your hand right now." The book that I was holding at the time was Sense and Sensibility by Jane Austen. He said, "Why are you reading that book, and what do you hope to get out of it?" In the course of the conversation that we had, he revealed to me that he works as the head of security at the high school in our local municipality, our local independent school district. He is high school educated. He never went to college. He knows what he is missing. He also leads people, only a team of two, to provide security for hundreds of students in this high school building. Think about that for a minute, folks. Hundreds of parents, some of you might be parents yourselves, entrust that this gentleman is going to lead people well who are protecting their children in a postmodern culture that doesn't always seek to protect children. And this guy is reading The Brothers Karamazov. and seeking to learn leadership from Anna Karenina and is interested in emotional intelligence via Jane Austen. Not a business book, not Good to Great, not a Tony Robbins seminar, but via reading classic books, classic literature. By the way, I told him about the podcast, and he immediately downloaded the two episodes that we had talked about, where we had talked about Anna Karenina, and where we had briefly mentioned Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky. There is an audience for this podcast, folks, and the audience is in your town. The audience is the security guards, the civic leaders. The audience is the fractional CFOs and the Christian warriors. The audience is the real estate agent driving in her car and the manufacturing middle manager running the team. The audience is the mom chopping her vegetables and the dad banging a nail outside. There's an audience for this podcast. And so, in answer to your question, how can you hope to make a dent in leadership with a podcast? I hope to make a dent not in leadership so much, although that is the primary focus of this podcast. I hope to make a dent in you, the listener. And then I hope that you will go out and you will respond by making a dent in your own personal universe as well. By the way, another question that I get asked very often as part of the listener feedback is, hey, son, you're a podcaster. Do you listen to other podcasts? Or what other podcasts would you recommend? And that was a tough one because you hate recommending your competition. But there are some people who are doing podcasting well right now and in no particular order. If I just go through my Google Podcast Player, I can point out to you. Let me bring that up here. All right. Let's see. Let me sort of cycle through a couple of things. Okay, here we go. So just initially, right here at the top of the player, I've got, Peter Zeihan. He's a geopolitician and a geopolitical strategist, not a politician. I shouldn't frame him that way. He'd be upset. A geopolitical strategist, right? Who really focuses on the intersection between demography and geography and how that influences geopolitics. You could check him out. And that's Peter Zeihan, Zeihan. I also do a fair bit of listening to Glenn Lowry. I do like the Ask Glenn show. I think that Glenn Lowry is saying very important things in the world today about race and race relations in America, and bringing on interesting guests like Heather McDonald and, of course, his constant talking buddy, John McWhorter. And I've known about John McWhorter for many, many years now, since back when he was writing for the City Journal, and now he writes for the New York Times. Always great to hear those two folks discuss race and other issues in America in a non-hyperventilating fashion. Weirdly enough, I've become a fan of a really obscure podcaster, obscure theologian. I'm going to say this name, and he's now having some trouble in reform circles because of his position on eschatology and postmillennialism, premillennialism, and dispensationalism. I'm not going to get into all of those on this podcast. You can go check out what those terms mean. Just Google them. But also Google this guy while you're at it. Gary DeMar, DeMar. He's doing a great podcast. I'd recommend you listen to him because the way that you think about the world and the way that you think about how human beings are set up in building, as Augustine might say, the city of God. How you think about that really does matter for what you will do for the future, in particular for how you will lead. If you're going to listen to Gary DeMar, then you have to go listen to his sparring buddy, the guy who founded Canon Press and the Fight Laugh Feast Network, as well as a number of other projects in Moscow, Idaho, and was recently, as of last year anyway, interviewed by NBC News and accused of all kinds of different things, even though he has literally 20 years of documented evidence on YouTube and other places, and particularly in his writings, of saying precisely exactly the opposite of everything NBC News claimed that he said, a fellow named Doug Wilson. Now, he's not everybody's cup of tea, and I wouldn't recommend him unless you're seeking to be reformed. And by the way, I mean religiously and reformed in terms of Christianity. But I do listen to Doug Wilson. I do listen to his podcast and his interviews, not because I agree with him about everything, but because I do believe that he is the most scintillating voice right now in religious and theological circles in the world, particularly in the Western world today. And then finally, I have two big folks that I listen to, two big names you might know. And again, I hate giving the competition any credit, but I do believe I am in competition with these folks. Even our little podcast is in competition with these folks because our audience overlaps with theirs. So the first one is Jordan Peterson. And I have gone and seen Jordan Peterson. I've bought and read both of his books. I believe fundamentally, if the West were to produce an intellect at any other time other than now, and it was Jordan Peterson, he would be hailed as a giant of intellectual heft. Instead, he had to come along at a time when we were engaged in, as I said previously before the jump there, postmodern discourse, which is where the person who is the least entertaining and the most sober in the debate loses. Not because they are untruthful, but because they weren't entertaining. And Jordan is truthful. I've watched him do his thing live, and I know how hard it is to do that thing. And so forget just the content of his ideas, which is powerful enough and backed up by reality and research and lived experience. The delivery of it all is quite stunning. So I do listen to Jordan Peterson. I listen to a fair bit of his podcast. And finally, I recently started listening to a guy who I didn't really think too much of, gotta be honest. I really had pegged him or pigeonholed him or put him in a spot as merely an entertainer. And he is entertaining, but he's also fumbling in a grasping sort of way towards the truth. And by the way, the truth with a capital T. The comedian, the actor, the former drug addict, and now a meditator, a raconteur, a family man, no longer a man about town, and interestingly enough, I believe he's just received recently his purple belt in jiu-jitsu, so that makes him a jiu-jitsu compatriot of mine, Russell Brand. Yeah, that's right. I'm listening to the Russell Brand podcast. Not all of them, not every single time. There's some places, some roads he goes down I just can't follow, but I do admire his guts and his tenacity in pursuing what he believes is the truth in spite of what others may think of him, may think of his past, or may think of where he's going with his future. And so that's it. That's who I listen to when I'm not reading. So I do a lot of listening. I do a lot of reading. I don't do nearly as much writing as I should, although I am correcting that inch by inch, moment by moment, sentence by sentence. And of course, I then publish this podcast for all of you so that I can have these discussions and debates, you know, in a modern and classical fashion, even in our wickedly postmodern times. Thank you. I really do like myself some Barber of Seville. It always puts me in mind of the old school Looney Tunes. You remember the episode where Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd were both in the opera house on barber chairs, and Bugs Bunny decided he was going to give Elmer Fudd a haircut, and somehow they wound up getting married. I love that show. One day we'll do an entire podcast episode on the leadership lessons from Looney Tunes, because there are things you can learn, interestingly enough, from Looney Tunes. So something I'd like to address here at this time, at this moment in 2023 here on the podcast. I'd like to put it down for posterity. I'd like to have it on the record. There's been a lot of hyperventilating ever since ChatGPT showed up in the world or was released into the world by the Sam Altman-led OpenAI project back in November of 2022. Now, whenever you are listening to this at whatever time, we will be on whatever different version of ChatGPT, whatever, And the hyperventilating has been profuse at the beginning of all of this. It kind of reminds me, I'm old enough to remember the hyperventilating that occurred at the beginning of the internet. And it kind of puts me in mind of that, except more so. Except the truly, genuinely smart people back in the day who, you know, didn't really know anything about the internet. Well, they admitted they didn't know anything about the internet. But now we have people now almost 40 almost 50 years into the internet, coming up on 50 years into the internet, who believe that because they've had that 50-year experience in the internet, can opine about large language models, can opine about, about large language models learning from human beings, and can opine about the impact, mostly deleterious and damaging, that this will have on the world, particularly on the Western world. I don't think too many folks in, well, the areas outside of the West are really thinking too much about this. They're still trying to scrabble from the hard pan their own existence, even now. The question that arises with the gee whiz idry of things like large language models that can create generative text, generative video, and yes, I am aware this is a podcast, generative audio that can make me sound like I've said anything. The problem with those types of innovations is not the innovation in and of itself. The problem is twofold. It's the anthropomorphization of that innovation, or the giving of human characteristics by human beings to something that is fundamentally inanimate and inhuman. By the way, inhuman not meaning lacking humanity. Inhuman not meaning lacking the need to be dealt with or to be addressed. Inhuman meaning literally not human. There is no mind behind a large language model. Or, to be even more specific, the only mind that there is behind a large language model, particularly in our time, who knows what there will be in the future, but the only mind in our time that is behind a large language model is a human mind. You know, a human mind that dreams, not of electric sheep, but of real ones. A human mind that has biases. A human mind that is led to love its children and abhor its neighbors. A human mind that is urged to eat, urged to sleep, and urged to make love and connection at a deeper level than the mind that is prompting the large language model can even comprehend. There are challenges and drawbacks to building in a digital world where the hyperventilating over the giving of human characteristics to something that is fundamentally an algorithm at the end of the day is reaching a fever or is beginning its long upward J curve to the right slide towards a fever pitch. We're going to talk ourselves into something before the technology gets us there. And I don't know what that something is, but I know that it is not something that is real. Now, I'm old enough to remember the movie The Matrix, and so I'm not going to get into a philosophical discussion about what is real and what is not. I'm just going to go with this definition of real. Real is what your sensory inputs tell you is real. Real is not the metaverse. Real is not the fake things of video games. Real is not dressing up in cosplay and hanging out with your friends. That's not real, and we know it. We don't need a lot of fancy philosophical, hoop jumping in order to determine the difference between reality and fantasy. Instead, we merely need the courage to say something is real versus something that is not, and then the courage to defend it when it is attacked. We need to defend the real. And in 2023, when we want to take action, we need to take action to defend the real. That's what leaders do. In defense of that real, R-E-A-L, not R-E-E-L. Don't want you running to Instagram. By the way, that's not real either. R-E-A-L. In defense of the R-E-A-L, in defense of the real, we need to move out of digital spaces and we need to move into physical spaces. Look, your human body still needs a chair to sit in, a table upon which to put its elbows, and objects to entertain it when the electricity that powers your digital world goes out. One of the interesting things with the COVID-19 epidemic that occurred over the course of the last 2 years, one of the interesting knock-on effects is that more and more people are becoming more and more aware of the importance of maintaining a foothold, not merely a toehold, but a foothold in reality. A foothold in the world of the real, the world of the material, the world of the solid, the world of the fundamentally important. The world where human beings that you have to look in, where you have to look into their eyes and you can see their expressions and their emotions and you have to deal with them as they are. That world. The world that makes some people uncomfortable because it's hard to deal with, hard to comprehend, and sometimes hard to negotiate. The dealing of with people in this world creates challenges and drawbacks for building in a digital world. And that's why the folks like Sam Altman and all of the other folks that are involved in all of the other large language model projects that they euphemistically call artificial intelligence, this is the thing they miss. Most leadership still happens human to human rather than human to simulation or human to machine. The real world still matters in spite of all of the frenzied hyperventilating. The courage to defend it and the ability to recognize the difference between it and something that is not it are going to be key for success for leaders and the key to building real things in the real world with real people all the way into all of our tomorrows. So, what books are we going to be reading and where are we headed with the books themselves, right? So, I addressed a little bit in our second section there, our second beat, such as it were, while I was talking about listener and audience feedback, sort of, where is this podcast headed? And by the way, that right there, as a is a very famous radio guy used to do back in the day in my formerly nicotine-stained hands, is the information here about where we are going with the podcast and what are the books that we are going to be exploring coming up here over the course of the remaining months of 2023. So just to give you a preview of coming attractions, coming up in June, we are going to talk a little bit about the abolition of man, and we're going to talk about how do you build a city of God in an increasingly paganistic society. Again, I don't say this as a value judgment. I state this as a statement of fact about where our society, where our Western society and culture has gone and where the puck is going. And so there are books that can train us as leaders about how to think about this culture. One of them, of course, is St. Augustine's City of God. We will revisit that book. We will read books 3 and 4 in that great tome. But we will also be talking with a guest about the role of Caesar and the role of government and the role of state in a pagan society and how leaders respond to that role or don't by looking at, the Bible. So Kings 1 and 2 and Chronicles 1 and 2, we will be covering the King James Version, of course. You always got to go with the OG when you're reading the KJV. Then we will be talking about, of course, the abolition of man itself, C.S. Lewis, and hopefully covering that with our co-host, our semi-regular co-host, Tom Libby. And by the way, Tom would have been here today, but he was doing other things, and so he told me to just roll without him. So we love having Tom on. He brings a different perspective to the podcast and a bit of levity, and so we're looking forward to having him with us in the month of June. Following on that, we will head into July, and we will, of course, be talking about, as we did last year, the American State Papers. So we will be revisiting the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, and, of course, the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers with our old buddy and friend of the show, Derolo Nixon, and inviting on a new friend of the show during the course of the month of July, Libby Unger. As we roll into the deep summer swells of August, we are going to do a little bit of a summer slog through some New England authors, Herman Melville, Edgar Allan Poe, and of course, one of my personal favorites, a man around whom I had a really hard time wrapping my arms when I was in high school, Nathaniel Hawthorne. Yes, that's right. We'll be reading The Scarlet Letter. In September, we're going to go on an epic hero's journey to open up the fall and to begin the end of our year by looking at possibly the greatest fantasy epic ever written, at least in modern literature, J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. I'm a huge fan of the movies. I'm a huge fan of how Tolkien was treated by Peter Jackson and by Weta Works. And so we are going to do a nod to Tolkien in September and go on an epic hero's journey. In October, we're going to talk about war making and what does that actually look like. We're going to revisit that idea. We're going to go back to Thomas Edward Lawrence, and we're going to look at his own biography, in his own words, The Seven Pillars of Wisdom. We're also going to talk about The Last of the Mohicans by James Fenimore Cooper, and we're going to pair that with talking about the darker side of the Native American wars that were engaged in by the U.S. military post-Civil War in the West in the 1880s and the 1890s and early into the first part of the 20th century by reading Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee by Dee Brown. In November, we're going to get out on the road again. We're going to revisit the on the road idea that we explored topically last year and look at The Sun Also Rises, O Pioneers, Roughing It. And we're finally going to get our arms, and I've been promising it for a long time now, we're going to get our arms around The Canterbury Tales by Geoffrey Chaucer. We're going to get our arms around all that old English. And to wrap up the year, we are going to spend a little time looking at Dickens and Chekhov and Cather and exploring Christmas themes with At Christmas Time by Anton Chekhov, Hard Times by Charles Dickens, and The Burglar's Christmas by Willa Cather. That's our book list, and you will be able to see on the other side of June on this podcast in the show notes, below the player, our updated reading list for 2023. We also are going to have some extras, some interviews, and some very special guests. We are talking right now with St. John's College about having a faculty member on to interview from their Great Books program. We're a big fan of Great Books programs, as you could probably imagine here on the podcast, and we want to do more with them. And so the first step there is to invite them on and talk about the great books, talk about the classic literature of the past and what it can teach leaders in the present. We'll also have special guests on, including relatives of authors that we have spoken to on this podcast, including some famous authors of the 20th century, talking about their impressions of their family and of people who came before them who added so much to our canon. Finally, offline, remember I said building real things in the real world, my wife and I are moving down the road on starting on a project that we beta tested last year live with real children, a kids' leadership curriculum project. And we're keeping the details of this under wraps, but suffice it to say, leadership doesn't just begin in the corporate office or even in college. Leadership starts in the home. And how do you train up leaders from birth until age 18, or sometimes much later these days? How do you train them up in the way that they should go so that they will not forget it? My wife and I are developing this project, and so I want you to stay tuned to this podcast because it's going to become integral to the kids' curriculum project as we move forward in 2023 and well into 2024. All right, so that's just some ideas and some thoughts about where this podcast is headed and some upcoming events and projects that we're very excited about launching. And we will be, of course, talking about these on this podcast. We would love for you to rate the podcast if you've lasted with us this long, if you've hung out for the hour. I thank you for your time and for your attention. I thank you for your ears. As always, I thank you for your feedback. Please keep it coming. Please keep the book suggestions coming. And please stay on the path of leadership at home, in your community, and of course, in the wider world of the workplace that we all inhabit in this great and glorious country of ours as we attempt to build and rebuild for the future in the West. And well, that's it for me. Listen and subscribe to the Leadership Lessons from the Great Books podcast on all the major podcast players that you listen to podcasts on, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and even Spotify. And please leave a 5-star review if you like the show. We need those reviews to grow, and it's the easiest way to make sure that this show gets into the ears of the leaders who need to hear it. And of course, tell all your friends. If you want to get started on the leadership path, HSCT Publishing's products and services can help your team do that. Check out our training webinars, coaching services, and more at leadershiptoolbox.us. We also have a video-based subscription service that's software as a service that can help your team become better at the individual level. 60 modules and over 100 hours of video and written content for you at leadingkeys.com. That's leadingkeys.com. We've also got books that will help you and your team grow. Pick up a copy today of My Boss Doesn't Care, 100 essays on disrupting your workplace by disrupting your boss, and subscribe to the Little Red Podcast I launched earlier this year with the same name as that little red book. My most recent book is 12 Rules for Leaders, The Foundation of Intentional Leadership, co-written with contributions from Bradley Madigan. This is the book for right now that was written for leaders right now. Pick up a copy by heading over to 12rulesleadersbook.com/now. That's 12rulesleadersbook.com/now. You pay for shipping, and you'll get a copy of my second book as well. Finally, you can get all these books in paperback, hardcover, or as ebooks on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and any other place online you order books. Finally, HSCT Publishing is on YouTube. Like and subscribe to the video version of the Leadership Lessons for the Great Books podcast on the HSCT Publishing channel on YouTube. Just search for HSCT Publishing and hit the subscribe button. You'll get our weekly video updates, which is the video version of this podcast. And, of course, you're going to want to subscribe to my other podcast. That's right, I do more than one. The Haysan Sorrells Presents audio experience, where I talk more casually with a broader range of people about all matters that matter in the world today, from arts all the way to analytics. All right, that's it for me.